This is Radioactive, a weekly grassroots environmental and social justice news journal for October 18th, 2012. This is Meredith DeFrancesco. Today we look at the aggressive industry push to increase the mining and transportation of tar sands oil from Alberta, Canada. This despite its reputation for creating more climate-changing pollution in its processing and use than conventional oil. Today we again look at the proposed tar sands pipeline from Montreal to Portland, Maine, and what companies would profit. And we speak again to a representative of the tar sands blockade in eastern Texas, which has been engaged in an active and high-profile campaign of civil disobedience against the current construction of the southern segment of the Keystone XL tar sands pipeline. The second round of presidential debates again made no mention of climate change. Candidates spoke of their support for natural gas fracking, and Mitt Romney briefly mentioned the Keystone XL tar sands oil pipeline. Aside from the Keystone XL, there is an additional line being proposed to extend as far as Portland, Maine. Last week, the Natural Resources Defense Council, NRDC, the National Wildlife Federation, and a number of other environmental organizations released a paper outlining who owns the pipelines currently carrying tar sands oil or slated to do so across the Great Lakes region, the provinces of Ontario and Quebec, and through northern New England, ending up in Portland, Maine. Corporate research exposes ExxonMobil to be the majority owner of the layers of the subsidiaries owning Portland-Montreal pipeline. ExxonMobil's subsidiary Imperial Oil and an additional company owning 24% of the Portland-Montreal pipeline, Canadian Suncor Energy, both are among the biggest developers of the tar sands in Alberta. Earlier today, we spoke with the Natural Resources Council of Maine on this issue. We have Dylan Voorhees, the Clean Energy Project Director with the Natural Resources Council of Maine. Welcome to the program.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Thank you for coming on the program again to talk about the tar sands pipeline slated to pass through the northern New England states, ending at the coast in Portland, Maine. Now, nationally, we've heard a lot about the Keystone XL pipeline, which is designed to bring tar sands oil down from Alberta across the Midwest to Texas. And later we'll have someone representing the resistance in Texas on the program. But let's talk again with you about this path that would take Alberta tar sands oil to Montreal and then to Portland. And since we've talked with you, there's been more information coming out about what companies have ownership and stand to benefit most. And we can also talk about the information recovered through the Freedom of Access Act that has recently discovered that the plans for the main leg are a lot more concrete than corporate or government officials earlier led people to believe. So let's talk about this network of proposed and already operating pipelines that could end in Maine.
Okay, good. Well, you know, one of the things I would just start by saying is, although I think your listeners are probably a little more familiar maybe than average Maine person about this pipeline, but a lot of folks may still just be learning that there is an oil pipeline that goes across Maine, a very old pipeline. The pipeline in question was built in 1950, so it's a 62-year-old pipeline and has been operating for some time. And if you asked somebody in Maine, who is it that owns that pipeline? The answer you would almost certainly get would be the Portland Pipeline Limited, and that's the name of the company that owns that pipeline. But exploration that we helped in, but I have to say was mostly done by NRDC. And the National Wildlife Federation really tried to peel back the layers of corporate ownership with some rather startling findings. But you really have to dig quite far in who owns what, and then who owns them, and then who owns them again.
So let's talk about that.
So if you look at who owns the Portland Pipeline Company, you find that it's wholly owned by another company called the Montreal Pipeline Limited, which is another corporation, and that's, of course, not that interesting. And then you go back and and discovered that the Montreal Pipeline Limited, that corporation, which again it wholly owns the pipeline itself, is a majority owned, 76% owned by a company called Imperial Oil Limited. And I think in the U.S. side, even still, Imperial is not a name that many people will have heard about, and I could say a little bit more about Imperial. But you have to go even one step further to recognize that Imperial is a majority-owned subsidiary of ExxonMobil. And so it's really quite accurate to say that ExxonMobil is actually the majority owner behind the pipeline that goes across the state of Maine. And that's, I think, disturbing for a number of reasons, many of which start with the general corporate reputation that ExxonMobil has acquired over the years as a company that really puts profits ahead of environmental safety. And it's working on the profit side. They're one of the most massively profitable corporations on the planet. And it also is very clear that they have a really problematic record for the environment, including oil spills.
Again, and maybe we should mention where people can look at the map I'm about to refer to in this recent short paper that was put out called ExxonMobil's Plans to Bring Tar Sands Oil Through the Northeast. Could you just mention that website real quick?
So if people go to our website, it's www.nrcm.org. They can find pretty easily a click on a link for tar sands, and that will take them to a place with lots of information, including this new revelation about ExxonMobil.
Thank you. So you can look at this map and you can see the line coming down from Alberta, down through Chicago to Sarnia, and then an additional line that's owned by Enbridge that goes to Montreal and then to Portland. Can you talk a little bit about that, the final section, which is not yet slated for tar sands, or it's slated for tar sands, but it's not yet being used for tar sands. It's a couple of lines that will be reversed, and talk about that a little bit.
Yeah. So it is really worth looking at a map to see what's going on. But between Ontario and Montreal, and then in Portland, there's really one existing line that that currently carries conventional crude oil up from Portland to Montreal, and then westward across Ontario. And there's been a lot of what's happened to turn this whole thing into a tar sands pipeline has been happening in bits and pieces. In Canada, Enbridge has already gotten permission to use a portion of their line between Sarnia, Ontario, and Montreal to reverse it to bring tar sands. And we expect by the end of this year that they will seek a permit to bring tar sands all the way to Montreal. But the segment between Montreal and Portland is of course the segment that's most concerning to us here in Maine, and that's because of where it goes through the state and the dangers of a tar sands pipeline in particular. And that's, it's very clear that there's a plan emerging to use that pipeline for tar sands. Although the company remains puzzlingly in a denial mode.
I guess that brings us to the Freedom of Information, or as we call it in Maine, the Freedom of Access Act, that previously, and I guess we could suspect that industry has not wanted to be as forthcoming, one, because their project perhaps wasn't going to be moving as quickly enough because of economic factors, but also because there's been such bad press about the environmental effects of the mining of the oil up in Alberta, as well as the Keystone XL pipeline that people have been quieter here. But comment a little bit on that atmosphere, as well as what was revealed in this Freedom of Access Act.
Yeah, so I think that fortunately tar sands is getting a problem in terms of its reputation, and more light has been shed on that, and that's turned into more opposition. Two years ago, the huge catastrophic spill of tar sands into a river in Michigan, the Kalamazoo River,
and that was also the pipeline operated by Enbridge.
Yeah, the pipeline operated by Enbridge, and you know, the pipeline that is part of the feeder network that would send tar sands, you know, across Ontario and to Montreal, and so that in addition to the fight against Keystone and on the Canadian side, really mounting opposition against tar sands and tar sands pipelines proposal to do the same thing that we're seeing here to the Pacific coast. So all of that, I think, has created an atmosphere where the companies are really reluctant to be out in the public talking about what's really going on. And what we learned in a freedom of access request that was made into the state of Maine is that at the same time that the company, the Portland company, was really saying that there's no active proposal to use the pipeline for tar sands, they were meeting with DEP officials and the governor in the governor's office to talk specifically about tar sands and the Maine pipeline. So last fall, in October, there was at least one meeting between the Portland Pipeline Company and folks from Canada and the lobbyists for the petroleum industry. And the documents that we received show that the topic of the meeting was to talk about tar sands and this pipeline. So that really is just kind of further evidence of what we have been saying for some time, which is that this really is a plan that is being put together and lobbied on. And I think it's all the more reason for Maine public to be learning about the threat of tar sands so that we're really in a position to make sure that it's really fully reviewed and the public gets to weigh in before it's too late.
What are potentially some of those areas where the public can weigh in, as this pipeline is already built, it's already being used for oil, and so it would be a reversal, whereas with the Keystone XL pipeline resistance, like we're seeing in Texas, the pipeline in areas has not been built yet, so there's a different scenario there. Can you talk about what potentially are those places for public interjection on this issue?
Well, there aren't many yet, but that will require the project sort of filing more officially, and one of the things that we'll be looking at closely is actually the same thing that happened with the Keystone Pipeline, which is that the line does cross an international border. Like the Keystone Pipeline did, and that really triggers a set of reviews, or should trigger a set of reviews, environmental reviews, and reviews by the State Department, and ultimately potentially a decision by the President. And so that's one thing that makes this a little bit unusual, is that these pipelines are really more regulated at the federal level than at the state level, although there's also some state and local things that are happening. One of the things is going to be important is that folks across Maine become educated and in part to help build awareness, which is still really just growing, and to communicate concerns about this pipeline and the threats to Maine to elected officials. Both state elected officials and our congressional delegation are going to be really important to ensuring that there's full environmental review, particularly at the federal level.
And just quickly, in our last minute, can you again remind listeners what sensitive areas or particular concerns we have about where this pipeline does pass through in Maine? And we should say it also goes through Vermont and New Hampshire as well.
Yep.
But where it passes through Maine, and then why there are more concerns, as you've outlined on this program before, with putting tar sands oil through rather than conventional oil.
Yeah, sure. So the line first comes into Maine right alongside the Androscoggin River. Comes in and runs for many miles right alongside the Androscoggin River, and crosses the Androscoggin River. It goes across the western foothills of Oxford County and down along the Crooked River, which is an extremely pristine river in the state, very prized for trout and brook trout and other species, landlocked salmon, and that is the Crooked River feeds right into Sebago Lake. The pipeline follows right alongside the Crooked River, crosses it several times, and then comes within just hundreds of feet of Sebago Lake itself. And Sebago Lake is, of course, the drinking water supply for the entire Portland region. 15% of the state gets its drinking water from Sebago. And then the line goes down to Portland and South Portland right alongside Casco Bay. So there are really lots of extremely important water quality and economically important natural resources that the pipeline flows along and presents a risk to. And that risk is really much higher with tar sands flowing through pipelines than regular oil. And that's because tar sands is much thicker. It's like a peanut butter substance that has to be heated and put through at high pressure through these pipelines. It's called tar sands for a reason. It's full of sand and abrasive elements, very acidic and caustic. And all of those things increase the risk of corrosion and a pipeline spill.
And which there is a record.
And there is. And that's what happened in Michigan spilled 1 million gallons of tar sands oil into the Kalamazoo, where it was, again, because of the different physical properties, nearly impossible to clean up. And had much greater toxicity in the air and water that affected hundreds of people around and the whole region around the Kalamazoo, still dredging the river and trying to clean the oil out of the ground. But the studies early studies show 3 times greater incidence of spills and leaks than regular oil pipelines, and we just can't afford that risk in Maine, given that there really is no benefit to the state to have tar sands piped through our state and put onto tankers.
Dylan Voorhees, anything else you'd like to add?
Just the last thing I would say is that not only does ExxonMobil have a really bad track record of oil spills, and it's not just the Exxon Valdez huge spill in Alaska of a tanker. They actually spilled a huge amount of oil into the Yellowstone River in Montana just last year. But they're also heavily invested in the tar sands itself. And Exxon and its subsidiaries are profiting and seeking to profit from digging the tar sands oils out of the ground in Alberta. And now it's clear that they're also trying to get it along these pipelines out to international oil markets. So it's really a significant threat because the company behind it has everything to gain from these profits. And the evidence shows very little concern for the places that they pass through.
Well, we're going to have to leave it at that right now, but we'll continue to follow the story with you, Dylan Voorhees, with the Clean Energy Project at the Natural Resources Council of Maine. Thanks for joining us today.
Thanks so much, Meredith.
Again, we are looking at the aggressive push across North America to increase the mining and pipeline transport of the highly polluting tar sands oil. Again, studies show tar sands oil to create 20% more climate-changing pollution than conventional oil. Earlier today, we also spoke with a representative of the tar sands blockade in eastern Texas, a diverse and active campaign working to block the current construction of the southern leg of the Keystone XL tar sands pipeline. So we have with us Ron Seifert, a spokesperson for the tar sands blockade in Texas. And again, which town are we speaking to you in?
Well, right now, I'm moving around in East Texas. We've been operating all over the pipeline route from the Oklahoma border all the way down to the Gulf Coast.
Great. Well, welcome again to the program.
Thanks for having me.
We last talked with you at the end of August, right after the first direct action, which has subsequently kicked off an energetic and aggressive campaign of lockdowns, tree sits, and other civil disobedience actions, which have continued to garner national attention. Recently, a New York Times reporter and photographer were arrested along with other press while trying to report on the issue, and the coalition opposing the building of the leg of the Keystone XL pipeline through Texas has been diverse, including those whose land is being transversed. Police being hired as private security by the company building the pipeline, TransCanada, has threatened to arrest landowners who interfere on their own land and have arrested and applied campaign tactics to those who are participating in the civil disobedience actions. So, Ron Seifert, can you bring us up to date on what's been happening since we've last spoken with you and what's happening right now with this explosive reaction to the building of the Keystone XL pipeline in the section in Texas, even while many people have believed that the pipeline has not been yet wholly approved?
Right. So there's been a lot of we've received a lot of encouragement, and the campaign has grown substantially since August. It's a testament to what a bad actor TransCanada is. The corruption, the fraud, the malpractice in this story has outraged so many people. Folks have come from all across the continent, including several all the way down from Canada, to participate and not only involve themselves in directly blockading construction, but to show support in a whole variety of ways. So it just goes to show that speaking truth to power and identifying injustice when it's so rife will garner the necessary support. We're working with a good community of local landowners and community organizers that have been fighting this for years and years without garnering the national attention. So it's rewarding to see that the story is finally getting told, and this injustice is finally having a bright light shined right on it.
So can you remind people again the extent of this pipeline and that relationship between this private property and police in the area now being hired for private security for TransCanada across people's land who are even resisting the project?
Certainly. So in response to the outrage most people feel towards this project, TransCanada has responded by trying to repress the story, trying to isolate individuals, and attempting to quiet this as much as possible. Protesters are being sued. There are slap suits against nearly 30 demonstrators and blockaders. The idea being not that what we're saying is wrong or incorrect, but simply it's a threat, and it's a tactic of intimidation to try to silence opposition to the project. Ultimately, TransCanada is trespassing. Their whole project is predicated on fraud and misinformation, and it's fairly clear they don't want that story to get out. So to prevent it from getting out, as you noted, journalists are being repressed, detained, handcuffed, forced to stay back in an attempt to not cover the story, not get the opinions of the blockaders themselves. TransCanada has hired police officers to act as their own private security. And it's this weird double standard where, although these are off-duty police officers, they are wearing their police uniforms, they are carrying their state-issued weapons, and they are arresting people on site.
Is this even legal?
Well, I don't know enough. I'm not a lawyer to know all the legality of it, but certainly it seems, in my view, and in the view of the campaign, that there's been a lot of overreach. Landowners have been detained and forcibly asked to show ID on their own private property, something that usually requires a warrant for police to actually enter a private property and start interrogating property owners.
Mm-hmm.
Landowners that are being threatened with trespassing, and in fact, in a really egregious case, Miss Eleanor Fairchild, a 78-year-old great-grandmother, simply was arrested for trespassing on her own farm for walking out on the easement and trying to stop construction when she had never even signed a contract with TransCanada. She refused the pipeline. They condemned and took her land unilaterally, and she never approved of the pipeline, felt that she was being put in harm's way, and her property is actually the headwaters for a lot of springs and creeks in the area, so the fresh water of much of her community depends on the protection of her property, and the pipeline is to go right through her natural springs.
And can you give a quick thumbnail sketch of the other direct actions that have been happening and still occurring? The tree sit continues?
Yes, the tree sits, our tree village and our timber wall are now entering their fourth week of sustained resistance to the pipeline construction. However, TransCanada has circumnavigated the entire tree village, so they, as much rhetoric as they've put out, that it's impossible to change their route, that the routes can't be changed to go around ecosystems that are particularly sensitive, they, in a matter of hours, just decided that they could make a big jag in the pipeline route and go around the 500-foot section that was protected through the tree blockade. So it's a slap in the face to all the landowners that have sensitive areas like springs, to all the landowners that just said, no, I don't want you, you're going to have to go around. TransCanada has been saying for years that that's impossible, that it can't be done, the pipeline has to go only one way and adjustments can't be made. They've shown clearly that that's a lie, that they can very easily just zigzag the pipeline around, and they only chose not to do so initially, not because they respected landowners or respected our environment, but only because it would have been cheaper and shorter for them to do it that way.
Now, again, the entire project of the Keystone XL pipeline has not been approved because of some of the international issues. But can you talk about, you know, again, now this has received more national attention, I think people realize that the project is unfolding. Talk about how this leg is going forth while others might not be yet.
Certainly. The big holdup with the northern segment of the project is with the State Department, the federal government, because the pipeline will cross our national border. It requires what's known as a presidential permit. So the president, whoever that might be after the election, will have to sign off on that segment of bringing a pipeline from outside the country within the country. That's not the case for the southern segment that starts in Cushing, Oklahoma, and terminates in the Gulf Coast. So there is an approval and analysis process that different regulators have to weigh in and on, primarily the EPA. However, much of that process was circumnavigated by Barack Obama when he signed an executive order to expedite the pipeline construction. So grievances the EPA had raised about the initial project in its entirety when it was first proposed as one whole project all the way from Alberta down to the Gulf, EPA raised several red flags about things that were dangerous about waterways, wetlands, and particular ecosystems that needed further analysis. However, instead of analyzing those things and reviewing them individually, because Obama had asked that the project or the government, quote-unquote, cut through the red tape to bring it online as fast as possible, that review never happened. TransCanada was just issued kind of carte blanche permits to cross any place that they wanted without any individual analysis of what effects or consequences there might be with leaks in those areas.
I'm afraid that we're going to have to wrap it up now, Ron, and hopefully continue touching base with you as this campaign looks like it is continuing with much energy. Can you just give us an idea where people can go if they want to follow these activities and anything else that you want to say in conclusion?
Certainly. Our website, tarsandsblockade.org, is a great clearinghouse for information about the pipeline, the latest up-to-date news on the blockades that are going on. There's a lot of ways to plug into this campaign. You don't have to come to Texas. There's folks all over the country that are helping us through fundraising efforts, through solidarity actions, through raising awareness. We need a lot of legal help at this point as well. So any lawyers out there that want to throw some pro bono hours at the campaign and stopping the greatest ecological disaster unfolding in this continent, we'd love to hear back. So anyone can sign up, get our new newsletters, our emails, and be included in this campaign for our collective future.
Ron Seifert with the Tar Sands Blockade in Eastern Texas. Thanks for joining us today.
Hey, my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
You have been listening to Radioactive, a weekly grassroots environmental and social justice news journal on WERU Community Radio. You can listen to archives of this and other locally produced programs at weru.org. Thank you for listening and acting.